And welcome to AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I'm Tim Capper, your host, along with the dynamic duo. Yes, they're both back this week. If I had some sort of superhero music, I would play it. First, John Stark.
Yo.
Close enough. And Ben, the frat likes that. Frat Valley.
If we could play The Boys Are Back in Town, I mean, ideally we would, but just the legal ramifications of that, we don't have the license, it's trouble.
I only have 15 seconds to play it anyways. Isn't that usually what it is? Yeah, I mean, you do this all the time, actually. It's only 15 seconds.
Yeah, on podcasts, they tend to get away with 15, but I just don't want to chance it, you know?
Or our opening salvo is... 30,
oh yeah,
30
no, that's a massive violation.
But wait, it's done in 2 15-minute parts. So the 15
seconds. Wait, can we get some? Let's get some behind the scenes insight. What are those songs? Or what is that song?
Well, the ending is one that song people hated because they knew the show. The ending is from a YouTuber. It's called. What is it called? It's done with Toby Turner. It's done by...
It's a YouTube original?
It is a YouTube original.
Okay.
Yeah. Who else is in it? Wayne Brady is in the video. They were able to get Wayne Brady for the video. Work It. It's called Work It.
Wow, how seriously strange is that? Okay, so it's not really a popular song.
No, but it was enough that the our great listeners actually knew what it was and knew enough that they've heard it that they hated it.
Okay, all right.
Because I used to do an intro at the beginning. The other song is by... it's been so long since I've put it. It is by...
I've made a terrible mistake asking you this
you
question.
You have, but it's okay. It's opening banter.
Okay, all right,
it's
that's
opening
good.
Banter, and it is by, God, this is so bad.
Oh my gosh! All right, what a start.
I know. this is where that thing should come up on the radio. It's like boop boop boop. We're sorry, your memory just sucks. Just give it up. It'll come to me. Anyways, so I think the other one is called. Don't remember. Hey, at least we're not talking concerts. So, John, any concerts recently?
No, but how about some football?
Yeah. Love that.
Oh man, this is so bad. It's a Canadian group. That's the bad thing about it. It's a Canadian group, and now it's going to bother
worst
me for the
part,
rest of the rest of the damn show.
Yeah.
It's going to bother me for the rest of the day.
Fans, you can check us out on Twitter at ArenaFan, where we're going to be later tweeting the trivia answer to this question.
That's right. Check up on the message boards. If you happen to know what it is, just please email me at tim.capper@arenafan.com. And then by the time I will know what it is, and then I will say, well, yeah, duh. I know what it is.
Vintage Tim.
But basically, the premise behind the opening song was because of the original one was, I know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows. That's exactly how the thing went at the beginning for the original song.
Right.
And the new one has to do with rumors and I think rumors. Rumors and innuendo.
So you're saying there's thematic relevance to the song?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was a method.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, there was a method to my madness. There was a method to my madness. See, as I said, it now is going to kill me. But anyways, dude. Football this week, and I think I said this on social media a few times, it's just that this was arena football that we know, and I know most people say, there's no defense, there's no this, there's no that. All of us, I'm sure, have either seen or been to games in which we've had this much fun with arena football. And tell me, guys, if I'm wrong.
No, you are completely right. I mean, like I was talking about a few weeks ago, I mean, this is the brand of the AFL that made it a successful product. I don't, you know, I don't think that anyone really wants incredible defense that's going to these games. Most casual fans just want to see electric, high-scoring, war-on-the-floor action.
That's right.
And guess what they're getting it, Tim?
Heart-stopping, helmet-popping. To go
the
really,
threat
to really
decidedly likes that, Tim.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's... Yeah, it just reminded me of old-school arena football. And one thing we will talk about when we talk one of these games is, you know, where does this game rank in terms of our collective memory of all the games that we've seen in arena football, our history.
Yeah.
And where does it fall within the league? But I mean, it was just amazing. I mean, having both games on CBS Sports Network was amazing. You had said, you know, Hall of Famer said doing color on the first game, Hall of Famer Pat O'Hara doing color on the second game in Albany. You couldn't get any better. You couldn't get any better whatsoever.
Yeah. I was actually thinking while watching the broadcast that as much as I sort of angrily lament the fact that CBS Sports Network is a weird avenue for a league that is struggling to gain random viewers and you know, it's not something you can watch online. You can't rewatch games, whatever. I was still appreciating for a moment how good those broadcasts really are. I mean, it's really presenting the league in its best form. And I think both broadcasts were exceptional. Anytime you see a stream of a game, it's just not as good. It just doesn't have the same resources, and we'll probably get there very soon. Mm-hmm. But if this is perhaps the last year of CBS Sports Network, it's nice to appreciate it while we got it.
And that's what I wanted to ask you guys specifically, since we were on that topic. John, what's your thought? I mean, is it – obviously, we know Ted Leonsis is very high on the OTT platform and all the ways that you can stream on social media that the league has done over the past 2 years. Is losing the CBS broadcast or dropping CBS Sports Network as the main broadcaster, national broadcaster, a good or a bad thing heading into the 2019 season?
Well, I didn't know for sure before this weekend, but I feel at this point that losing a national broadcasting partner, not necessarily CBS, but any partner, losing any partner may be something that may hurt the league a little, because not only was the football great this weekend, but like Ben said, the broadcasting was phenomenal. And that was for both games. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time I felt that way the entire season.
Yeah. Ben, what do you think? I mean, it's...
I think that whatever contract the AFL is involved with CBS, which prevents the streaming stuff and all the things I've been complaining about, maybe that's part of the problem for me.
Right.
Because and maybe it's CBS Sports Network. Let's be honest. It's just a smaller network. It's not even in the same ballpark as NBC Sports Network,
right,
or let alone Fox Sports Network. And maybe it's not the CBS aspect. Maybe it's just finding a different partner. I don't know that CBS is the be all end all. I don't know if the AFL has prospects for other opportunities on networks. And I don't exactly know what their deal is. But I think that it is valuable in some ways. If there's an opportunity to simulcast, if there is a way so that those games aren't exclusives, if DraftKings next season is going to have to broadcast all games, which is, according to their announcement, what's going to happen, then that means literally in its current form, the CBS deal could never work because those games couldn't be on DraftKings.
No,
so they need to figure out some sort of workaround or maybe a different broadcast partner. And I still do think there is value in broadcast. It's really the only reason people still have cable boxes. So, in the sports world, it's still relevant as much as I like to think it's not. I think it's important, but potentially for the next few years.
But for cord cutters, though, guys, isn't it going to be a little bit weird? Because with you don't necessarily, you know, sure, with YouTube TV, you do get CBS Sports Network as an example, and I don't think you get all, because you get a lot of local stuff. I don't know, depending on the city where you are, what you get as far as if they offer things like NBC Sports Network. Are people going to, because I guess they're going to stream, what are they going to, how do they stream actually? I don't even know how DraftKings streams. Do they stream via Twitch? Do they stream via YouTube? Do they stream via their own app?
I mean, they stream via their own app. It's a proprietary platform. Yeah.
Sort of like what MSN is.
Yeah. And in a way that will also be a problem. If we move to that's the thing. If we move to exclusively streaming, DraftKings is great because it's a place that people will happen upon the AFL on. hopefully, mm-hmm. presumably. Mm-hmm. The issue with social media only, like, for example, the IFL does or other indoor leagues, is that you have to be seeking that content. So if you're talking cord cutters, they're never going to seek the CBS Sports Network app when an AFL game is on because they don't know what the AFL is and they're probably not that interested. But it's sort of a situation right now on broadcast television where you could scroll through your program guide and land on the AFL, and that's free advertising for the AFL. But that's not going to happen when we really consolidate this and people totally ditch cable. Right now, the AFL being on broadcast is simply going to reach an older audience. And I don't know what the demographic they're going after is anymore. But yeah, I don't know. It's a dicey situation going forward, I think.
But you have to bring in the old guy. You got to bring in the millennials. You got to bring, I mean, in the...
How do we get a hold of these dang millennials with their hashtags, John?
I don't know, man.
I'm not too sure.
Hashtag not too sure. So when the story that was really seemed to garner some interest this past week is one of the few news things that we can talk about because we are having to tape on Monday because of just scheduling issues this week. But the story that Jaws and I think was Pro Football Weekly. what's it called? What's that other site called? Pro Football. What is it? It's the other one that NBC bought.
Pro Football Focus?
Yeah, but no. Anyway, Pro Football something. People are screaming, I'm sure, screaming at their radios now. Tim, you're an idiot.
Are you talking about the article that Ron Jaworski was featured in?
Because it was in the
It was actually on Philly.com.
It was on Philly.com, but it was also picked up by Pro Football. What is it called? It's been a bad. Oh, by the way, since I'm having a moment right now. The opening song is by Simple Plan, and it's called Opinion Overload.
Oh, my God. I did not know that. Okay, our opener is Simple Plan.
It's Simple Plan, and it's called... see what I'm saying? It works perfectly. Opinion Overload.
Well, now that I know that, I mean, we can get these millennials. They love Simple Plan. They can't get enough of those guys.
Or the Canadians who like Simple Plan.
Either way.
We know most Canadians and most Americans do not like Nickelback.
No, we don't. It's just not for us.
No. But yeah, in that story that Ron was talking about, he talked about YouTube. Did he talk about Twitch also, John? I know
he talked about YouTube. He talked about Twitter again.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll bring back Twitter and
Pro Football Talk. That's what it is. Pro Football.
There you go. And such as Google, even, but I don't know exactly under what service Google offers.
Besides YouTube. YouTube for one.
Right, but to mention Google and YouTube.
Be Jaws being Jaws. I'm not sure whether.
the best quote in that thing from Jaws, he says, I'm a football whack job.
That's my favorite. Yeah, reading whack job these days is it's dicey stuff. I love it.
I know.
Throwback.
So it begs the question, will this be a good thing? You know, CBS Sports Network will go out in the blaze of glory, being that they're going to carry the Arena Bowl this year. So I think it's the first time. It's the first time that they're going to actually carry the Arena Bowl in all these years? Because it's usually gone to another network.
Right.
I'm curious to know, you know, besides the extra portion of what they're talking about, the possible amount of teams that we are going to have, it's interesting how he put it. But you know, to me, OTT guys cannot be the be all end all. Not everybody, the older fans, don't necessarily know how to use the apps or use a smartphone as much as we might, and as much as the kids might. You know what I'm saying? Do you think they're putting their? Do you think being open to YouTube and being the other and Twitter and Twitch, they're leaving the door open rather than just putting all their eggs into one basket, which could be bad for league exposure?
I mean, it's an interesting question. I think that I'm optimistic about next season, just the ability to watch games. And I think another thing the AFL needs to look at themselves in the mirror is whether being on a national stage is important to this league in its current form right now. The way that the AFL developed in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, it was attempting to be a national product. It had teams across the country. There was a reason to be on national television because they were building a product sustained by celebrity ownership and glitzy things like video games and playing cards and stuff that the league didn't really need, but, you know, was the product they were making.
Right.
Now, the AFL is in a different era where potentially they may have to follow the example of Albany and go for mid-markets and see what is the most financially viable plan right now. Is it to go after a Washington, D.C. that may not be able to catch fire at all because there's so much to do there? Or is it to go after these smaller cities, which some people were talking about on the message boards, just potential cities like Raleigh that may be the place to go? And do you need to be on national television to succeed in those markets? Isn't what's important right now to succeed in local markets by advertising locally and by being in the community and getting people's, you know, interest that way? And how much does a being on CBS Sports Network really help the league as a whole when the league itself is sustained by its individual franchises right now, not this big enterprise like it used to be?
I'm thinking with, you know, I've always said, and I've even reached out, and I think John, you and I talked about this because I don't remember Ben remembers hearing this since he's been away for a few weeks. You know, I said if the league can stick with the local close rivalries and drivable games, because, you know, they do have that league pass this year, you know, going to, and I'm sorry to be repetitive for those who remember me talking about this, but just for Ben's sake, you know, a Montreal and an Ottawa, as an example, you're four.
Yeah, I was on that.
Okay,
show.
I wasn't sure.
I'm
yeah,
caught
wasn't
up.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, you're only 4 hours away from Montreal from Albany, six right. hours away to Ottawa. So maybe that's what the league is going to look at doing is, you know, if they do bring in a Tampa and an Ottawa, a Tampa and an Orlando again, then, you know, there's 2 hours. You and you have a major rival.
Right.
So it makes me wonder if that's what's going to be the plus for the league or the way that they're going to go. If you can include the NHL owners who already own their things, hey, all the more better. But I think as Jaws said in the story there, it's about ownership too. They got right. rid of the owners that really weren't owners. They were owners in name and owners in quotation marks only.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, 12 to 15, this is what boggles my mind. And yes, I know we haven't talked about the games yet, but this is what, when it comes to arena football, where you're able to talk about almost anything here. But when this comes out, you know, Commissioner Beau said that 12 to 15 cities have expressed interest in adding AFL expansion franchises. And he believes the legalization of sports betting will give the league the financial wherewithal, that good pronunciation, Capper, to make that happen. 12 to 15 cities have, that's crazy. Which would mean, see, I don't want to talk about the infamous 20 mark again. I can't do that now. Because we're just going to be let down, I think. I'm hoping not, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's the question with any statement like this. Is this just PR? And is it something to take seriously for people like us, you know, versus casual fans who are reading this article, ownership groups that he's trying to rile up? You know, when you say publicly 15 cities are interested, that's probably something they're waving in front of those 15 owners. And that's something you have to put out there. Whether it's actually true how solid those groups are, that's really questionable to me, given the AFL's history of making these promises.
Right. I'm just afraid that you'll get rid of some of these quirks, the positive quirks that the league has, if you get rid of the OTT stuff and like that too. So, you know, like, I mean, we've gained finally a goal line cam. Finally. But, you know, one of the best parts of the game, which I keep promoting, is how they do replay. But, I mean, it's gonna be a very interesting offseason. A very interesting offseason, to say the least. So, and obviously, then now it leads us into what we were starting to talk about at the beginning of the show, was this, the past weekend's games. Now, I have to ask you, John, from a Valor point of view, Valor fan point of view, was the 72-42 game between Baltimore and Washington, is that final score of 30 points, a 30 point victory, is it that bad, or should it have been worse? No, I'm being honest. I mean, sometimes you'll see, you know, they'll say, you know, guys, they'll say a game, it was a 7-point game, but it in no way shows how good X team was over Y team. You know what I mean? I mean, was it that bad of a game? I mean, we all watched it, mind you, but I mean, it's from a Valor fan point of view, that's why I'm asking you.
So I'll start off by saying this. A month ago, we saw Baltimore beat Washington with only 42 points.
Right.
And I think that not a thing could go right for the Valor in that game. Mark Lewis and his kickoffs pinned them every time. They could not get out of the end zone. I just don't think a thing could go right. From my point of view and watching it as a fan of the Washington Valor, it was frustrating. But seeing Baltimore score and set a franchise record, that was great, because we're starting to see high scoring games again, and it's another very exciting week in arena football.
You know, it's 72 points. I was very surprised. I mean, 27. Baltimore scored 27 freaking points in the fourth, including the infamous play that made the SportsCenter top 10, the 46-yard interception return for a touchdown.
Oh yeah,
yep.
I mean, there were some positives in this game for Washington. Reggie Gray got it 250, career 250, came the 12th player in league history to reach that mark. And what's funny too, John, is that Arvell did not look that bad. Again, he scored 5 total touchdowns. He didn't throw as many yards as the week before. And Hippard, for Christ's sake, he only threw for 178 yards.
Yeah, I had mentioned in my recap earlier that he had a very quiet week for his standards.
I mean,
that's nothing.
No, and you know, Rory Nixon was a running machine, 3 TDs rushing. I mean, DC has looked better, guys. They've looked better since Arvell's been under center. I think this one just got away. This got away from them. I mean, they were only down 10 at half, but when you
they only scored 7 in the third again.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, the question that becomes the unfortunate question is whether we believe they won that one game in spite of themselves.
Versus
Philly.
That was a huge accomplishment, though.
It was a huge accomplishment. Everyone's excited. I'm not putting that down. I love it. But it sort of does make you wonder, not if it was a fluke, but if it was something, you know, they won despite their mistakes, the same mistakes that are going to continue to plague them. Like, was the ship righted? That's really the question you have to ask.
Okay, that's fair.
And I agree that they do definitely appear to be improved. I think Veli is the answer for the rest of the season, for sure. But the question just is, this team going to go into the playoffs with a chance?
Well, here's one thing we're forgetting, is that Baltimore is undefeated at home this season, and they are in first place. So we're not talking about Washington playing another team that's sort of beat up like Philly right now is.
No. Yeah.
But did you honestly expect the way that Baltimore have been playing all year, did you really expect them to drop 72? I mean, I didn't.
I guess it was a sort of a time bomb. I mean, Hippard's been so good, even though his stats weren't crazy this week. You know, I would have expected at some point this season, with how bad the Valor have been, for a crazy game like this to happen scoring wise. I'm kind of surprised it hasn't already happened. So in a way, yes, but I'm saying that, you know, a couple weeks after the Valor have sort of corrected some of their mistakes. But you know, in week 5, I probably would have said, oh yeah, you know, someone's going to put up 80 on these guys.
I know I think early on, I agree with you that that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, they needed to make the change. You can only imagine if DC would have been in any of these games if they hadn't made the head coaching change and getting, you know, Nelson under center. They got their quarterback. It's who they need. I mean, this year, anybody can make some noise at any time. I think the big test will be coming up. I mean, with what, and we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, what Philly put up and how they did it. You know, they got, you know, DC has them this week. So Valor fans have a lot to be have a lot of things to be positive about, but they just need to go on a run. They need to go on a run. I don't know. Now, the crazy game. Jeez. This is arena football at its best. Philadelphia, and I was watching this specifically, guys, with the clock at the end of the game. Philadelphia scores a touchdown with no time on the clock after having the ball with was it 0.4?
It's 0.4 seconds.
0.4 seconds. And Darius Prince just got open.
Yeah.
And what's funny is how well Shane Austin has started to play now. Since leaving DC,
Yeah, he's slinging. And this game was like watching. I mean, I was honestly having flashbacks to like 2014. If you know Grady versus Austin, it was and like in a gunslinging showdown. It just it didn't feel like 2018. The whole game felt like just old school AFL defense blowing every coverage. not that there haven't been great defenders in the AFL, but just the way the game used to be played, where it was just dropping bombs every drive. You know, Albany. You know, scoring on it literally every drive until the fourth quarter. Just unbelievably exciting stuff.
Now there were a lot of things that occurred in this game. You know, both Austin and Grady throwing 10 touchdowns in a game. First time that it had been done, would you believe? And I know you'll love this because this was your team that you followed, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time since Aaron Garcia, the New York Dragons, and Joe Germain of the Utah Blaze did it back in February 11th of 2006.
God, puts a smile on your face, Tim. yeah, that was an unbelievable stat.
Other ones too. Aaron Washa, what the hell? Where'd he come from?
Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, so Washa stepped in for money, basically. Well, that was interesting. I don't know if you saw his interview where he was basically saying, "Well, I'm basically stepping in."
Yeah.
For Darius Reynolds this week, who was active, and unfortunately he didn't practice this week, and his back injury is lingering. And we've been talking a lot this season about how rotation of quarterbacks affects the success of individuals on that team from the receiving corps perspective. And so then you get these games where, you know, you find your guy and then you hit him for 8, and it's like, oh my God. I mean, especially a rookie who is, you know, it was an unknown, obviously, before this season. It was just an amazing game, I mean, from that perspective.
Washa had the first 200-yard receiving game since Quentin Sims did it for the Brigade, his 205 yards versus Tampa last April. Wow, what else happened in this game? Joe Hills, Joe Hills, number 89, jeez, extended his streak. Joe Hills becoming now alone in 10th place all time for touchdown receptions in a career, surpassing, you're going to love this. This is all goes back to you again, Ben.
Yeah, Mike origin story.
Hrachek.
Ah, my man, Mike.
Passes Mike Hrachek.
I mean, how dare he pass him, but like still. Which, still nice to hear the name.
Which, by the way, and I think I mentioned it to you before also, I think I have his either his first year or second year jersey, Iowa Barnstormers jersey here at the house.
Really? Like like a fan jersey
game worn.
Oh, that is so crazy. I have his Green Bay Packers jersey from training camp.
Oh, dude, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a classic memento.
I love having it with the old Iowa.
Oh, I know. The Barnstormers.
With the wings.
Unbelievable jersey, yeah.
So a lot of stuff happened in this game, guys. I mean, just listen to this. Shane Austin, 26 of 40, 337, 10, and no interceptions. Tommy Grady, 18 to 29, 335, 10, and no interceptions. Aaron Washa, 12, 208, and 7. Darius Prince again, 13, 113, and 3. Joe Hills, 9, 143, and 3. Malachi Jones, 7, 177, and 5. And a rushing touchdown for Jones. Crazy. Now, This is the question that I posed on the message boards, and I want to pose to you guys. Now, the crazier thing in this game, by the way, is Albany. Albany did not have a third down until the fourth quarter. Not a single third down and not a single fourth down until the fourth quarter, which is mind-boggling in itself for football, period. Now, what do you think was the cause of them not possibly going for Albany, not trying to kick for a field goal with kicker Kenny Spencer to try to go up with an extra 3, which I think would have given them the win, basically given them the win, because they would have been up by 15, because Kenny Spencer earlier in the game had missed 3 extra points. Now, which was the larger variable which made Coach decide to do what he did? Was it the Kenny Spencer incident, or was it Joe Sykes getting ejected? Sorry, wrong word in this case. Getting DQ'd, and I'll explain why, getting DQ'd in the third quarter for getting nailed for two offsides, defensive offside penalties within the game.
So you're saying you think that they potentially didn't go for it because they couldn't trust their defense to stop them for two more scores?
That's the thing. What was the bigger factor? Was the Joe?
I mean, I think it's got to be the Spencer thing. I mean, knowing that he missed three extra points and that alone being the thing that, I mean, you can't say that's the thing that lost them the game, no. But in this case,
no, what lost them the game is that last second touchdown to Terry.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. In this case, like, if we're just going to cancel out defense entirely in this game, it was the thing that cost them the game because, the reason they couldn't kick a field goal there. I mean, otherwise it makes no sense. I don't really think it could be the psych situation. I think they just believed he was going to miss it. And there's, as we know, we don't see it that often in the AFL, but missed field goals, you know, the ball is live.
Right.
It's often a nuclear situation for the kick return team. Those end up in huge returns and touchdowns all the time. So knowing that Spencer was very possibly going to miss that kick ended up costing them the game. I mean, it's a really tough situation. I think they still should have tried.
John? Yeah, I don't think they wanted to test the laws of probability on that one.
I really think I've been going back and forth on this because, and by the way, to explain, people, and I was mentioning it to our reporter Ryan, who covers the Empire Force. I don't know how many people knew why or how, because it sort of was just passed over that he got ejected. Again, sorry, wrong word. Disqualified for the second half. Most of may have not known why. And I really think, I don't know, guys. I mean, I've been going back and forth on this because I see that Sykes is, he's a beast. And he is, when it comes to his pass rush, you think that maybe him being still available would have made just a little bit of a difference in the pass rush in the second half. Maybe Sykes would have gotten to the quarterback on that last play of the game. If it did come down to that, maybe more pressure. Yeah. I mean, Spencer set up the loss. This is why my thought is Spencer's missed kicks set the loss up. But I think Sykes not being in the game allowed the loss to occur. Does that make any sense how I put that?
I mean, for Kenny's sake, let's give him that. But I don't know. I mean, I see your perspective on it.
I mean, John, what do you think? I mean, now that I put it, explain how my thought is. I mean, does it change what you're thinking that it really was on Spencer? That's why they decided not to go for the field goal on fourth down?
Well, I mean, I did say they didn't want to test the laws of probability.
Right.
And I was referring to Spencer only being 8 for 11. So I don't think they wanted to risk him missing the field goal. And then, like Ben noted, that then becomes a live ball. And we've seen crazy things happen, instant touchdowns. So I don't think Coach Keefe wanted to risk it.
I'm trying to look here and see, because that wasn't fourth quarter. It was... I mean, we also have to give props, by the way, too, Trevino, the kick again, once again, second week in a row, onside kick. What the hell? I guess that's one variable that I haven't really talked much about, because if they don't get that, the game's over.
Yeah, that was really amazing. And I watched that play like 10 times. I just kept rewinding it to try to see if Albany mishandled the coverage. And it's hard to say. I don't know that they, I think they advanced slightly too soon. Like, I think the ball had maybe been 8 yards deep by the time they attempted to recover it.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, I mean, because it was a pretty straightforward onside kick. And as the announcers were noting, he pretty much only offered one style of onside kick the whole game. I thought it was really interesting that Keefe called that timeout.
Yeah.
To see if he was going to offer up something else, or at least to make him show his hand. I thought that was just an interesting strategy. I mean, it didn't do anything, but yeah. I mean, credit to Trev. That was absolutely exceptional timing and totally won them the game.
By the way, if Albany would have tried to go for the field goal, guys, it would only have been from the Philadelphia 7.
Yeah, it was really short.
So there are a lot of variables in this game. I mean, it again, arena football at its best. I hated to see Albany lose because this sets up a lot of stuff. And this is my thinking, is right now Baltimore has a 2-game lead on Philly and Albany. And I say Philly first because right now Philadelphia owns the tiebreaker. So Albany is in third place. Is right now Baltimore a lock for a number one seed?
Well, that's a great question.
Philadelphia and Albany will fight it out the last week of the season, possibly for second. And who gets to choose who gets to have the home game first in the playoffs between 2 and 3? So, I mean, look at who Baltimore has left. I think we all can say that they have the better record, the better options.
Yeah, I think somebody on the Arena Fan message boards mentioned something about Baltimore maybe just needs to win one of the three final games to stay the number one seed.
Right, that's definitely the case, yeah.
No, we won't go over the game, but I mean, Baltimore has Albany, Philly, and then D.C. So it's not out of the realm. And we know Albany's going to be smarting, especially because they've lost the last 2 weeks. They've lost two last-second games. They've lost in the last second, the last 2 weeks. So I don't know. I mean, scenarios right now, I mean, technically, yeah, I think using a baseball terminology, I think the clinch, I think it's one game. I think it's obvious. I think if Baltimore wins this week, I think they clinch first place.
Yeah.
Because what's their head-to-head versus Philadelphia?
It's really unfortunate we've got this Washington situation this year, because the Brigade, Soul, Empire trio has been such a delightful part of this season. Like, in a season that could have been really a loss for the league as a, you know, in PR, in quality of games, and all the above with having only four teams, significance of play. The games have been so good because between these three teams,
right,
every one of them feels like some sort of playoff game. I mean, there's so much heat there.
As of late, I agree with you.
Yeah. And I wish the Valor were better, because that really would be, you know, if we're only going to have four, to have them duke it out like this, you know, it's really been something.
Baltimore, by the way, leads the season series over Philly 2-1. So I think it'd be done. If Baltimore wins this week, they clinch. If my math is correct here, guys, they'd clinch first place.
Yeah.
Because they got Philadelphia next week. The best that they could do is 2-2. Depends on what the points are head-to-head between these teams. Here, what is it? Head-to-head, Baltimore right now is... Baltimore's a plus 24 over Philly, over Philadelphia.
Well, yeah. I mean, they held them to 21 points in week 4.
Yeah. Well, they only won by 10.
That's true.
Well, by saying they only won by 10 in that game. So the other game, yeah, they won by...
Yeah, they beat them by 20 a few weeks later.
So, I think we've set it up. So don't forget, we are on social media, multiple places you can find us. You guys know that. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. That's all @ArenaFan. You can find us, our YouTube channel is still there. It's at ArenaFan Online. And if you want to listen to our most recent up to 3 episodes on SoundCloud, you can do so at soundcloud.com/ArenaFan. And do not forget all 200 plus episodes of AFL Tonight, dating back to 2006. You can go listen to and look for them at Google Play Music or over the iTunes podcast store. What is it called now? iTunes podcast.
It's Apple Podcast.
Thank you.
Yep, and it's an app on the store.
Yes, it's.
And I would just like to mention, since this is our music themed episode, I've officially decided. I recovered a CD that is in my room.
Yeah.
Tim, I don't know if you have this or if you're aware of what it is. Okay. It's called There's a Rumble in the House.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you know of it.
It
was released in 2004. It's the greatest hits of the Arena Football League. And it's volume one, and there's never a volume two. So we lead off with Bon Jovi, of course. And we won't get into all of it, but relevant to a previous conversation, we have Nickelback.
No.
feeling way too damn good by Nickelback, and sort of a premonition, the final track is Kiss, Rock and Roll All Night.
No way.
As we know, they would later join and then leave the league.
I don't know.
inside the disc is a poster. We got to post this on Twitter or something.
Yeah, dude.
There's a poster, and on the disc you can play a video that has John Elway and Bon Jovi facing off, which also was made into a TV commercial.
Whoa.
Unbelievable.
Actually, which is, if I'm not mistaken, it's on YouTube.
Yeah, it is on YouTube in such bad quality.
We have some of the ads that we put up on our, speaking of YouTube, on our YouTube page. Some of the, remember the pissed commercial for NBC?
Yeah.
That one's there. We posted those up there on our YouTube page, but I didn't even know this thing existed. I wouldn't have bought it.
Oh yeah. It was an instant buy for me, clearly, because they have Andrew WK on here and Alien Ant Farm. I mean, they even got the Black Eyed Peas. Knowing the AFL was in a place where they could get the Black Eyed Peas on their soundtrack is really, I don't know, it makes you think.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we're headed back to this place. John Elway is on the cover wearing a Colorado Crush uniform.
That's from the commercial. Yeah,
that's from the commercial. Yeah.
The mini movie.
Yes,
and by the way, for the censors out there who thinks I said pissed, I didn't say pissed. I said PSSD. That's what it was. The commercial was post.
Totally different.
What was it? Post Super Bowl. Stress disorder.
Well, it was a PTSD.
PSSD.
Yeah.
Post Super Bowl.
Super Bowl stress disorder or something.
Something like that.
They had such good ads. There was a time when I recently watched a game from 2002 or something with a friend.
Yeah.
There were unbelievable AFL advertisements. The AFL video game, the EA Sports games, they had great commercials. There was one where people destroyed a house because they were playing arena football inside the house and then ended up busting through the wall of their neighbor. I mean, they did high budget stuff. All the Aaron's commercials were great.
Yeah. That was the first of the two Elway and Bon Jovi ads, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because the second one they did in the casino for the television series Las Vegas.
Yes. And that was something to behold. I mean, it's really wild. I mean, and that was a great intro to the Arena Bowl that year because I was in Vegas.
Yep.
It was amazing.
But I remember too, because some of these commercials in the US made it into the pre-movie ads, if I remember correctly.
Oh my God, really?
Yes. Those same ones, those mini movies showed up, I guess, in the local, the cities that had them.
Yeah.
But yeah, John, do you remember, have you seen any of these?
I don't think I have.
I got to point them out to you, dude.
Yeah, it's great. 75% of commercials that aired on NBC were somehow actually related to the AFL in a very impressive way. Not in a way that was they were airing their own commercials. It was brands seriously entwined themselves with the league.
Yeah.
It was very cool. I mean, you only hope that something like that can happen again. I was looking at even the ads on the jerseys this week. I don't know why I just hadn't thought about them in so long. But the Seoul have Hyundai. And the Empire have a local,
yeah,
they have the field logo on them, but the Soul used to have Target. It was a big time for AFL brand tie-ins. And I think the AFL will be attempting to get back there. Being on DraftKings is definitely a good step because I think, I don't know whether brands want to be associated with gambling necessarily, but it's going to be a popular audience and a different demographic that maybe will help the AFL as a league in advertising. So,
well, I think this goes to the fact of what the NBA is doing.
Right. They're doing it too.
And that's huge money. I mean,
yeah. That's that buku bucks.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Hey, well, I didn't know you knew French.
Oh, of course. I'm swimming in French.
But John, you got to check. I said, when you have a chance, go over to the Arena Fan YouTube page. I got two of them are posted. Two of the shorter commercials are posted there. I don't think we posted the full movies, but they're available. And they try to show what arena football is, to bring the people in. It's how they shot them. And I think one of the funnier things there, Ben, what they did do in the commercials, just to make sure that everybody knew that it wasn't a new league, it was the Arena Football League season 19.
Right.
Mean, it's wow. Yeah.
I mean, it was smart. They did a good job of advertising. I mean, the NBC thing, I think, was a money loss, right? I mean, the AFL was paying NBC for that, right?
I think so, in some way, shape, or form, of course.
Yeah, but ultimately, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, I think it worked well. I mean, from the days of the A Day in the Life of Arena Football on TNN.
Yeah, that is such a good documentary.
which is on YouTube, by the way. I should know. I put it there.
the first 15 minutes are like a really good documentary about the AFL, and then it randomly starts going into the relationship between a player and a cheerleader for like 10 minutes. It just completely goes off the rails, but I love it.
Yeah.
Like those, that was such a good time.
Seeing a young, and also seeing a young Sed Bonner. Oh my God.
Yeah. That was Baby Bonner. Yeah.
Baby Bonner. So yeah, check it out. Check it out, John. When you have a chance, man, it's interesting. It's a, I know you're gaining your own arena football history, but it's something, you know, seeing the games this week, it's what we're saying, guys. We're trying to catch it again.
Catch the ball in the stands,
yeah,
Tim.
Something.
metaphorically
speaking. So it's so one last question, because we do have questions from the fans, by the way. Thank you guys, by the way, for reaching out early this week. We really appreciate it. Does, no matter if Baltimore ends up in first place or not, with the highest seed, guys, does Baltimore host Arena Bowl? John?
They should. Can the arena handle it? That's a good question.
Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have to. And the only other thing I could think of was that they'd be doing it at Capital One Arena just because they could. It's the same ownership group, obviously. So if they want to decide that a more upscale venue is necessary to woo the expansion franchises, if they have, you know, that always happens at the Arena Bowl. There's always a lot of, you know, hype for the league. Like, this is the moment. You know, you got media day, you got people, you got businessmen interested. I remember at last year's Arena Bowl, there were just random people from like the Chinese league that were coming in and like oohing and awing at the gameplay and stuff. So Royal Farms may not be the location to do it. It may not be able to handle that side of it. Maybe it can't even handle the influx of fans.
Okay.
To get the game.
That's where my point's going. Finish your thought, then I'll continue.
And overall, I think it would be ridiculous to take it away from Baltimore, but the fact that it could be at Capital One sort of takes some of the edge off of that, because it still would be a home game. You'd still get the same home fans. The team is still staying in at home. I mean, everything about it is pretty much the same. It's not like the playing surface is going to be a huge determining factor in how comfortable the Brigade are.
Right.
So, yeah.
My thought is this, though, and everything you say, it makes a lot of sense, guys. Everything you say, but you talk about wooing, you talk about being able to show your best, is if Baltimore and Albany make the Arena Bowl, does the league put the game in Albany?
Oh, that would be crazy. I don't think they could do that.
And you understand my point, though, is because for sure you are going to get 13,000 plus. You are going to get a full arena.
My ears are going to hurt again.
Yes. Because look at...
Ideally.
We need the big
test. I'm all for it.
The big test will be, I think, this week for Baltimore. Whatever the crowd is, it's their home finale. We need to see what the crowd's going
to
be.
Ted's hands.
Yes, I think it'll be. I think that's a huge factor.
You're right. I mean, it would be an embarrassing thing to. Although I just don't know if Baltimore was going to be hosting. I don't think they would bring it to Albany. Just as a franchise, I don't think that Albany is a market. I mean, obviously, it's in the Capital Region. It's 2 hours from New York, but having a game in the middle of D.C. is also a great look and very easy to get.
I don't think they would have it at Capital One. I don't think they would have it at Capital One.
You don't think so? You don't think the arena would be able to facilitate it or something?
No, it's not that. I just don't think I don't think they would house it there. And again, for me, it's fan base.
No, I get your point. And it's like, how confident is Monumental in the ability to drag people off the street? I mean, that's really the question. And if they don't feel confident they do.
That your comment right there says it all. Drag people off the street. How confident are they to drag people off the street? You know? Hey, sir.
That's what they would have to do.
Hot takes.
Yeah.
Whether Ted would be okay with relinquishing a home game in for that reason, I don't know. I mean, Times Union Center is really nice, and it is a nice place to show people what the game is like and what fans are like. But as a sports ownership group, it's just a bit strange to give up your home game for your championship, you know.
I know.
It would be weird.
I know.
It would be a weird precedent, too, for the league.
How so?
It'd be weird to make that sort of decision basically during the playoffs, unless, I mean, you'd have to decide that.
I got two words for you, Ben.
Okay, please lay them on me.
Stockton, California.
Yeah.
Where was the Arena Bowl supposed to be held that year?
I don't know. Give it to me.
San Jose. But it couldn't. I'll also give you another one. Glendale, Arizona. Where was the game supposed to be?
And those, those decisions were made the week before.
They were made, they weren't made in advance. Because of scheduling issues.
Okay, so we've established precedent.
But this would be a little bit different, which I do agree.
It'd be more savage.
I mean, they still drew. The thing is, they still drew in Spokane because they, Stockton.
Right.
Because it was a smaller arena. They still drew in Glendale. I mean, that was a great crowd in Glendale, too.
Yeah.
See, that goes to my point of, does the league find, would it be necessary for them to move it to an arena to showcase it on television, to showcase it to potential expansion franchises, that this, if done right, and I'm not saying Baltimore's doing it wrong. I don't want fans to take what I'm saying wrong, but what your franchise could be and how many people you can draw if you do everything by the book, everything correct.
This is such a spicy meatball.
Yes.
Do you agree, John, that this is a spicy meatball?
There's been quite a few this episode. And I think we almost have enough for a sub.
I mean, this is as spicy as it gets if this happens.
So I'm going to get a side of fries.
Yeah. Well, can we please get some chipotle mayo on that?
I'll make a stop.
Thanks.
I'm going to have the combo. I'm going to get the chips and I'm going to get I'm going to get the cookies and I'm going to get a drink.
Oh, he's going to get the cookies.
Yeah.
Chocolate chip kappa.
So that's hilarious. Now, I don't know how to, and John, I know we're talking back and forth as we're doing this. How do we segue into this? Because there's not really. Okay.
Wait, I had one earlier and you guys were discussing many things involving music and radio.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
So I'm still going to go with it. And we talking about censorship and we're talking about being able to listen to things and how to listen to them and where to listen to them.
Easter eggs all episode.
So, Tim, what's the exciting news for us this week? Well,
nothing is completely. There's no, the T's have not been dotted. The I's haven't been crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Like a bad 70s sitcom. But we may have an opportunity to have AFL Tonight go old school. It's the best way to do it. How can I describe this? Because
to go totally viral.
Yeah. We may have an opportunity coming up where a local radio station may be picking up our podcast. Once we find out more and where it's going to be, we will let you know. As I said, I don't want to jinx anything. This is just an opportunity that was brought to my attention this past weekend. And it would be very interesting, to say the least. Something that we have not ever done before at all.
I think maybe one little teaser is that we can say is it is a radio station in one of these cities.
Yes,
where there is an arena football team.
Yes, that we can say. Yeah, that we can say. But is it beyond that right now? It's really in the early stages. Everybody wish us luck, because as I said, I think this is something that we've never had before. So again, wish us luck.
The boys are going terrestrial.
Terrestrial.
We're hitting the ground, fellas.
I'm going extraterrestrial.
Oh boy! You guys are really going to need catchphrases if we get on FM.
With a side of buffalo sauce.
Yeah. FM radio was built on a foundation of catchphrase radio.
You know, we built the city. We built the city on rock and roll.
Tim's firing off references like nobody's business. This is crazy.
Yeah, but I'm also referencing Starship, for Christ's sake.
Millennials love this. Here's one weird trick to going totally viral.
Click this link now.
Yeah,
exactly.
Click now.
So did we have any questions from the fans?
Yes. We did. Thanks, guys, for joining in. Sean, did chime in with a question this week, and he also is GBU's. Sean's question of the week is about CBS and OTT. Surprising. We did talk about this earlier. There is a noticeable there's a noticeable difference between the quality and professionalism of the CBS broadcast and the streamed games. He's referencing, obviously, MSN. That was made starkly. I see what he did there. Starkly.
Oh, good one.
He even put that, dude. He even said, see what I did there, John? evident this week when we had two CBS games versus last week with none. What do you think needs to be happen to the OTT streams to reach the quality of CBS? Is it possible, or will we just have to live with a second-rate product starting next year?
We don't. And what is the answer to that?
Yeah. And what do you think?
As someone who works in production. Right. Sorry, did you not finish the question?
No. And he was saying, and this is my question too. Yeah, this is my question when it comes to, that I have asked too, is what would become of Sed and Ari? And the current broadcast teams that we've had.
Yeah, they would cease to exist entirely as humans. But that's huge. Yeah, that's sort of the consequence of losing broadcast is that we lose these two guys. But as for the streaming platforms themselves, it is really a shame the quality difference. And this is not exclusive to the AFL. This is with everyone. With the quality of streaming across the board with OTT platforms just never seems to match the quality of CBS Sports Network or of any broadcast televised network. Right. And then, you know, even if you looked at Univision last year, it felt like, oh, this is a great broadcast. And it's really the little things that these broadcasts get right, because when CBS Sports Network is not spending a lot of money to broadcast these games.
No.
They don't have massive crews.
No.
They don't have an insane amount of cameras.
No.
They're traveling light, and these aren't high budget broadcasts. And these are the same broadcasts that Monumental could do with the right team behind it. That's the thing.
I think we need to add in my caveat would be the right broadcast team.
Yes. Broadcast team is big, but I also think it's production. And I think the broadcast teams for AFL streaming have historically not been great. And that is definitely a huge part of it. And you're totally right. But some of it is graphics packages. It's transitions. Mm-hmm. It's pre-production work. It's having a dedicated staff to these things. We know, I hate to keep referencing Monumental because there are other examples of this, but we know that they're dealing with a lot.
Just to be fair, if you have to use them too, because I've come across a great one, which I loved, which is a local broadcast. That was Cox 7 when they were doing the broadcasts for the Arizona Rattlers. That was the best local broadcasters that I knew of.
Yeah. And a lot of local broadcasts were fantastic. I mean, in New York, we had SNY do the Dragons games. I mean, this is obviously a big callback, but a lot of local broadcast networks for these regional markets were fantastic. They were just produced very well because they had teams that were constantly working on that broadcast, or at least establishing the creative initially and the vision initially to get these consistently right. And so I think when you see Monumental experimenting, it's fun. And then you hear them mispronouncing names and it's not as fun.
No.
And you see things spelled wrong and sort of weird dropouts of audio. What I hated
specifically 2 weeks ago was them doing the broadcast from the studio, and you knew they were doing it from the studio. And as I mentioned to John, I said to him, well, when Ari Wolf is doing broadcasting from a studio, when he was doing it for tennis, for the tennis network, you didn't think that he was doing it from the studio because he sounded like he was there. And I think that's what the issue is. And it makes a big difference. You know,
it's a huge difference.
I can understand that these guys, they'll get, there are nuances. It's only their second year. I get that. But my hope is that wherever the AFL ends up, whichever broadcasting station or platform, because the way that Jaws is mentioning it, wherever they end up, they need to include people who know the game. And this is a great way to reference this, is that if you remember last year, they actually brought in, I think it was Sed and John Mita Perel, to do one of the playoff games and Tampa Bay was the producer of the Storm were the producer of the game that was broadcast on the net. And it was a good broadcast because mm-hmm. of who was calling the game. I just don't want Monumental and all them to forget about the broadcaster. We can change how the game is broadcast, which platform. But to me, having said, having it, having Jump, having PO, you know, all the ones that have been doing, Randy Gatewood. I mean, he's rough around the collar, but still, he knows what he's talking about. Have them to be, make sure that they're included somehow. They have to be. I mean, John, you've seen how the different broadcasts go. I mean, don't you find it when you saw the game, and we talked about it last week, but seeing the game that when you knew they were broadcasting it from the studio, that it just seems so cheap, so Bush League? It's one of the few times I'd actually call something like that Bush for the AFL.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a professional organization, a huge corporation, and they own some major teams, and then you have them broadcasting for the Valor and the Brigade, and like you said, from the studio at home, and the audio isn't synced up at points.
Yeah. I noticed that too, yeah.
And they're broadcasting in HD at 720, but it didn't even look like 720 at times during that broadcast, the one you're referring to, at least.
Yeah.
And it looks unprofessional, and I would expect to see better from an organization that has such a long history of great things. Just a little disappointed by it.
Yeah, I don't know where else we could go. I mean, Ben, I know you know a lot when it comes to the broadcast side. That I do know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they've made strides, but it's still not a professional product. I mean, it's hard to say that, but there have been broadcasts this year where I was legitimately impressed with what they put together. At times, it does feel like it's the broadcast team, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that you can really tell when you don't have that expert there, where, you know, if a unique rule situation comes up and they're sort of fumbling for it, or you can tell they don't really know the history of the players or the league. And those things really do matter on a broadcast. It's you don't just need that great play-by-play guy. You need the color guy mm-hmm. who really gets it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a big deal. So I don't know what they're going to do next year. I feel like next year there won't be a huge change. I feel like DraftKings will probably be simulcasting the Monumental broadcast again. But Monumental's not going to be broadcasting Seoul and Empire games, so we'll have to see.
Or other team, XYZ teams.
Right. The unannounced franchises. So who's going to be producing those broadcasts? That's really a big question. And whether the AFL can have any sort of quality control with that. You know, remembering ESPN3, you had games from everywhere on there, obviously, and it was great to have access to them, but you would have games without scoreboards, you'd have games without audio, mostly scoreboard feeds. Yeah. I mean, it was like a mess, and you look at that and you're like, what the hell? It's not that hard to get this right.
You need to have certain basics. Exactly. You need to have certain basics written down that have to be included when it comes to a broadcast.
Yeah.
So yeah, those
basic things, I mean, not to like, be checked off is, yeah.
It's funny you talk about ESPN3. You and I go back as far as Nifty.
Oh yeah. And you know, at the time,
Ustream was horrible.
Oh, Ustream was terrible. But at the time I felt like lucky to have those things.
I agree.
Because it was the AFL, you know, as a product was just something that, like, oh, I felt lucky that I could even see the Dragons on Nifty, you know.
Yeah.
And then now, just technology has gotten so much better. We know that it's possible to do this very well. So to see it botched, it hurts way more. And you know that it hurts the brand more. So these are things I hope the league improves on next season for sure.
John, what is your best case scenario for 2019 when it comes to broadcast television? Sorry, I can't say. Well, okay, I'll leave it at that term. What's your best case scenario?
Best case scenario is that we still see some sort of broadcast on television, like you just said, in some way, shape, or form, through cable, satellite, what have you, where you actually have a box and a remote and it's not an OTT or streaming service. And also included in that best case scenario is that DraftKings does their own broadcasting, or they do use Monumental's broadcast, but they improve the technology being used, and they bring on slash bring back former players and commentators such as Ari and Sed, P.O., the whole crew from CBS, and who knows what else, because a lot of those guys, I think, are working on 1099s anyways. So if they wanted to come call the game, I think they'd be able to, unless there's some sort of contract restriction I'm not aware of. Best case scenarios are those. We need to keep the product as close to what we're used to as possible with knowledgeable people who have been around the game for a long time and know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I think
that was perfectly said. That should be a mission statement.
Yeah, no, that was perfect. That was perfect. I mean, MSN has done some good things. They've brought in the goal line cam. They've brought in that pretty cool camera from the upper angle from Capital One Center. That camera from
the sky cam,
cam or whatever they're calling it from the scoreboard. And they're supposed to be bringing in and they haven't done it yet. Is they still?
Yeah, let's get that helmet cam.
They still haven't brought it.
We're overdue. We're overdue.
I want a taste.
I mean, seems like the stuff from the referees has gotten a lot better than what it was. I just hope for the best. And you know what? I don't think I could say anything more, because John, you said it perfectly. You really did. You really did. I think you said it perfectly. What is needed for broadcast for 2019? It's perfect.
Yeah, a little bit of everything with improvement.
Yeah, Sean, thanks for the question, man. Great, great topic.
Yeah, that was a great question.
Great question. We're gonna start with the GBUs, gentlemen. I know we really didn't talk about them, but we'll start again with Sean and his good with high profile QB injuries and the strong return of Grady. I feel the play of incumbent MVP Randy Hippard is not given as much attention as it deserves. Randy's domination under center with the Brigade offense is my good of the week. Not bad. Scott Napier, his good is three teams scoring more than 70. It has been a long time. John, yours.
Mark Lewis, 9 for 10, field goal.
Nice.
Kickoffs were nuts. Like I said earlier, he was pinning
bar balls again this week.
Yeah, crazy. he was pinning the Valor. They were taking crazy bounces. Things were out of control on kickoffs. Yeah, he's my good for the week.
Ben,
I have a themed good, bad, and ugly this week, and you'll catch on as I go.
Okay.
So my first is Darius Prince and his electric performance once again, and just his consistency and emergence in this league. So that's my good, but there's more to come on this.
Okay. My good is going to be again with the how good these games are coming, how they're returning to arena football that we know, that the longtime fans know and love the most. And as I said at the beginning of the show, yes, some people may say, well, where's the defense? But this is what we've grown up on. We're used to having games like this. And come on, who's going to argue when you have a game come down to the last play? Nobody can, really. We might as well continue. Ben, bad.
Aaron Washington.
Bad, Ben, bad.
It is my bad.
Michael Jackson,
wait, can
bad?
You give me that, Tim?
Michael Jackson, bad?
Yeah, give me Michael Jackson, bad.
Bad.
Thank you. Unbelievable electric performance. We already talked about it. I don't need to go on about it, but he's my bad.
Who?
Aaron Washa.
Oh, okay. Washa. Okay. I missed that part.
Okay. Sorry. I led with that. So, so we've got two Philly receivers so far.
Yes.
So just start thinking about the theme here. Yeah.
And the word electric.
Yeah. Electrics.
I think I'm getting there. Scott's bad is also a bad. Shane Austin and Philly putting on a fantastic finish. Brigade fans everywhere approve. Oh, interesting. Okay. Okay. I think my bad would be, I feel so bad for just Brigade, for Valor fans. And this team isn't, as I mentioned earlier in the show, this team is improving. It's just certain bad things have occurred where they're just, you know, they'll get it together. I know it's pretty cheap way of getting out of a bad this week, but it's just how I feel. For Sean, his bad is how about some bad defense by the Valor? No stops the entire game. That's bad. John, you're bad.
I'm going to quote Stephen A. Smith on this. Aaron Rodgers is a bad man. And I just want to say that everyone in Albany were a bunch of bad men. 20 touchdowns. That's huge between both teams. That was just an amazing game. That is my game of the week.
Yeah, it's very close to one thing. And one thing we'll talk about in a couple of minutes here before we finish the show. I have a question for you guys. We'll start with the ugly. For my ugly. I know people didn't really understand it, but it's a rule that we've been fighting for a couple of years. Is the way that Joe Sykes was disqualified. I understand it is there. I think it ended up being an ugly disqualification because I felt that I think he was a factor in the game itself. But the rule is there. There's not much that the players got to know about it. And the ugly thing really to me is that even though the penalty was declined, guys, it still counts against you. So he was still thrown out. Ugly from Sean is I'm doubling down. No, we already did Sean already. Sorry. whoops. From Scott, ugly. Arvel Nelson wetting the bed on multiple occasions.
Oh!
What is going on in D.C.? He is losing his composure after several weeks, after several bad decisions, too. Not good. Wetting the bed. That is the quote of the day. Ben.
In keeping with my theme, the electricity that has gone out is my ugly with Darius Reynolds. Now, it's legitimately upsetting to me with what's happened this year.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is injuries. And it just feels like a tide has turned this season, and it is legitimately ugly to see.
It started off in week one too, him going up against the boards.
Yeah. And seeing him on the sidelines, it's just like, oh my God. And then he dropped what would have been the game winning touchdown at the time. I mean, they obviously still won, but I mean, imagine if they hadn't and he dropped the game winning touchdown pass. It's just been a tough season. And I hope so much that he bounces back from this year. You know, football is the kind of sport where sometimes players don't, and you just see this immediate decline because of a series of nagging injuries, and that's kind of it. But he's a really hardworking guy, and I really hope that he bounces back from this. But that, unfortunately, is my ugly.
And John?
I actually could not think of one this week, so I'm gonna mulligan.
No worries. If I were to give a one, because I can take one for you, by the way, if I wanted to take your mulligan, it would be... and he's already admitted it too, is Joe Hill's dropping three, basically what could have been the game winning touchdown. Was it two straight passes that he dropped in the end?
Yeah.
So, hey guys, even though it's Monday, we do have
Did we just spare Kenny Spencer and ugly?
We did. Oh my God.
That is crazy. Okay.
Well, we did until you mentioned it.
Yes.
I'm not going to let him go that easy.
there are lines this week, guys. Who would have thought it's already Monday and they're already out? But the games this week do have a lot of implications, and people quit screaming. Yes, they still have implications for who's going to be first overall. Because if you're one and two, it still matters on how you're going to decide who's going to get the home playoff game first. It's still a huge thing. You'll get the choice, and also if you are top seed, you will get to host the Arena Bowl. Should get to host the Arena Bowl. So games on Friday and Saturday this week. Split schedule on the broadcasting, guys. On Friday, it is going to be Philadelphia coming off that spectacular win over the Albany Empire, traveling into Washington, who just gave up a franchise-high 72 points on the year. Game's going to be broadcast on AFL Now, Facebook Watch, MSN, and NBC Sports Plus Philadelphia. Or Philadelphia. Anyways, either way, you get the gist. early on, and it's being Monday... It's funny, and I'm actually very surprised at this, guys, is that Philly is only favored by 7 points with an over-under of 95.5. I am very surprised. I feel 7 is low.
Obviously.
I really think that's low.
I mean, it's obviously taking into account. It's almost like they put it into a computer, and it just was like, oh, well, they only won by 1 point, or they lost by 1 point last time, so it has to be this. You know, that doesn't really feel like a human-made prediction.
You know what's funny though? If you look at the plus minus between these two teams, the last two games that they've played, The overall total is Philadelphia is only a +2.
That is no, that is pretty crazy.
I mean, considering how it started off at the beginning of the year with Philadelphia whitewashing by 16 points.
Interesting use of whitewashing.
Yes, yeah. I did. Oh, I didn't even think about that.
edgy, oh, very edgy.
About that.
I don't know if we'll be on FM anymore.
What do you think of? I mean, I think obviously Philly can be beat. We've seen this, but the thing is, if they get into a shootout, there's no way. There's no way that Washington's going to be able to keep to stick with Philadelphia. I think they need to try to be able to slow this game down like they did with the other two games that they had earlier in the year. Do you guys agree?
It's actually kind of funny to think about these mashups and to think about every series of mashups and the fear going into the season of seeing teams play each other too many times and nothing being different about the whole league. And
yeah.
The fact that the quarterbacks have changed over so frequently makes it so that like it is legitimately interesting
yeah.
to see the difference in these games. And seeing, you know, Shane Austin was literally on the other team like 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's weird and kind of cool. To especially with this matchup where you've had these three quarterback swaps per team. So, you know, I think Philly takes this game, but it is at least interesting. Shane Austin has caught fuego, I think, and I think he'll carry it over.
John?
I cannot see it being more than a one-score game based on the history
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the line says that too, but no, I felt that way already. We saw Washington almost win one against Philly and then win one, and they have a great chance. They have home field advantage, and I'd like to see it happen as a Valor fan.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, and hopefully a nice crowd will show up too, which would be a huge plus also, no matter what their record is. I'm with all that's happened in the past couple of weeks. I mean, I'm going to give Philadelphia a slight edge, but I think that the line, based on what's happened recently, the line was a little low. I would not be surprised if the game's anywhere between 7 to 10 points as its final. Game, by the way, is at 7 o'clock on Friday. On Saturday, 7:30. In the final game between these two teams, which have a lot of implications, especially for first place. Albany coming off of a heartbreak. Baltimore coming off of a blowout. Game's going to be on CBS Sports Network. Game is in Baltimore. This is going to be an interesting matchup. And guys, the line, would you believe, is Baltimore is only favored currently by 4.5 points with the over-under of 99. That's more like it.
Wow. That's tasty.
What's your thought? Because obviously Baltimore wins this game, they have basically wrapped up first place, and Arena Bowl should go through them, depending on what happens to the playoffs. Albany wins this game, they have a chance, considering who Baltimore plays next week in Philadelphia. They would have a chance at tying, and it would all come down to tiebreak. What's your thought? They've already beaten Albany once at home already, and then they split in Albany. So what's your thoughts on this one, John?
Well, Baltimore has won every game at home, so they might as well just close out the season at home with a win. That's actually my feelings on this. You know, we've seen them be really dominant at home, holding Philly just to 21 points one game back in week four. I think it's totally possible that Baltimore gets the season sweep at home. Let's call it that.
Okay. Ben?
I see a furious Albany Empire lighting up the Brigade defense. It is my hot take of this week. I need to make a bold prediction, and I'm deciding to go with it. I think the Empire are going to win this game.
Wow. But by the way, two of the three games this year, guys, between these two teams have ended off with walk-off field goals, both by Baltimore.
Yeah. I just think this is the one where the tide turns a little bit.
Yeah.
I think Albany wins out, Baltimore loses out.
Wow.
Washington wins the Arena Bowl.
What's funny is I mentioned it last week. I'm still sticking by it.
Whoa. I was on a roll with hot takes. I couldn't stop.
I mentioned it last week. I'm still sticking by that no team's going to win more than 8 games this year.
Yeah, I was. I uh, I gasped, I think, audibly when you first said that, yeah. And now I totally agree. Yeah.
But I'm going to give, you know what? Albany is in first. I think there will be, I think, some minor changes, not necessarily personnel-wise, but I think Albany is going to win. It's going to be a squeaker, just like the last three have been. But you could not have asked for anything more between a first-year matchup between these two teams. A first-year series between, I mean, they've been everything that you could want in football games. But yeah, I'm going to give Albany a slight edge on this one. Albany a slight edge.
You know what you haven't said this episode, Tim?
What's that?
Is the word tutties.
You're right. I haven't said tutties.
Last week I heard tutties more than I think I ever have in my life, and I loved it. You were tossing tutties like crazy. I love
tutties. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, give me some more tutties.
Some more tutties?
Yeah.
So considering how many were thrown this past week, do you think we're going to see a week where we're going to have both quarterbacks throw 10 tutties each?
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Tutties. Before
my new text tone.
I know. Oh, here. Yeah. Tutties. Before tutties. We go, we want to mention that I will be, I don't know when it's going to be broadcast, but I'm going to be on the Stadium Journey podcast. I'll be taping it next week. They are having a show dedicated specifically to arena football, or more specifically the Arena Football League. And I'll be joining some people there talking about the AFL and different locales that we've gone to, what we think of different different arenas that we've been to. So it should be fun. I'll make sure that I mention it next week and we give let you know, guys know when it's going to be available. So the last thing that I want to ask you guys, because we have what a hell of a show. I mean, I'm looking at how much time we spent today. It's been amazing. The last thing I want to ask you guys is this. Based on the game that occurred in Albany this past week, in your history of watching arena football and knowing arena football, would you consider it the best game in AFL history? Ben.
It's so hard to make that call. I mean, the thing is, you know, what you question what this game was missing, and it's hard to think of anything. Because it was just touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. Now, it depends as a fan. Do you value that above anything else? I mean, it had the incredible ending. I don't know. It's hard for me to make a proclamation like that in 2018, just having, you know, having had so many crazy games from the 2000s and, mm-hmm. and, you know, playoff games, particularly or arena bowls,
oh,
even.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's hard to rank
the 80s.
Yeah. It's hard to rank it over that, but it was definitely up there. And it's one of the best games I've seen in probably the last 3 years, at least.
John?
Definitely the best in the last 3 years, too. I'm with you on that, Ben. And I was actually just looking through the historical schedules on the AF Arena Fan website. And I have not seen a game in the last 3 years where both teams scored over 72 points. It was exciting. I was cheering for the league and both teams at the same time. Like every time there was a touchdown, my jaw dropped. I was like, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah.
Like my arms were going up in the air and I'm at home. So it was exciting.
Can you imagine what it would have been like being there in person? I can only
yes.
imagine. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. I will agree. It's a little bit hard to, I mean, when you're talking about one of the best games that we have seen in AFL history would be the infamous ending for Arena Bowl 24. You can't. I mean, the way that one ended was very similar in how this one ended. It's on the same scope as Arena Bowl 24, but I think just because it wasn't for the championship, I would still have to give Arena Bowl 24 a slight edge.
Yeah, I mean, in the narrative of that game with like Aaron Garcia winning, there was just like so much history there. This is a maybe an interesting way to look at this is the start of a new history for the AFL. And this season is supposed to be the reboot season. So maybe this game is sort of like a great example of what the league can look like from this point on. But yeah, that Arena Bowl, I don't think there's any beating that really.
Yeah, and it's funny, in the past couple of weeks, we were down near, I think, 85 points a game. Because of all the scoring that we've had over the past couple of weeks, we're back up to 97.3 points a game.
Just after, again, every time we complain about something, they fix it. What else do you want? John, do you have a wish list?
anything can happen. I do. Instead of 149 points, I'd like 150.
Okay, I think we'll get it.
Okay, nice. Sweet.
Well, guys, it's great to have you both you guys back with me again this week. We always seem to have the longer shows and have the best conversations when all three of us are together. Again, great show. We will be talking to all of you guys next week. Any questions, comments, concerns, email me, tim.capper@arenafan.com, on behalf for either myself, John, or for Ben. So for everybody here at AFL Tonight, we're John Stark, Ben Fortunale, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.